Well, it's great to have all of you with us today. My name is Chris. I'm the lead pastor here at Tri-County Church. And we're in this series titled Fearless. It was a series that we've kind of stumbled into. Well, why? Because, well, the last 3 weeks for all of us has been an unprecedented moment. And so we kind of have been on this journey. And what's been really cool about it is it's just really feel like God has just kind of guided every step along this entire series. And so this is going to be our fourth and final part of Fearless. And I just want you to know, if maybe you're just newer to the life of Tri-County Church, or you know, maybe someone just sent you a Facebook link, Instagram link, someone you know, sent you a text and like, you gotta watch this online. I just want to say, first of all, I'm so thankful that you've just kind of connected with us as a church. And you can always go to tcconline.church, and there you could watch this entire series. So if you missed a week or 2 weeks, or maybe this is your first day with us right now, please go there. Watch this entire series. I just think it will just breathe some hope and encouragement and life into you. Also at tcconline.church, you can click on What's Up, and you can just learn a whole bunch about just what's going on within Tri-County Church. Well, Palm Sunday is here. And there's just something about Palm Sunday that just starts kind of this entire last week of Jesus's life. And from Palm Sunday to Good Friday to Easter celebration morning, there's something about the last week of Jesus's life that's so, so important. But right before this last week started, there's a couple interactions, there's a couple moments that I think so many times get lost in the Palm Sunday, Good Friday, Easter morning storyline. There's a couple interactions that take place leading up to Palm Sunday that I think are so highly important to your life and to my life. And so we're going to take a few moments and just look at these interactions, specifically between Jesus and his disciples, and then a few people, well, randomly along the way as well. And so we're going to be looking at these moments in what's called the Gospel of Mark, the Gospel meaning good news of Mark. And it really wasn't the good news of Mark, it was the good news of Jesus. And there's a guy named John Mark that wrote the Gospel of Mark. And well, people say his name was John Mark, but what we do know is his name was John, and he was also called Mark. So he has two names. And we all know someone with multiple names. Maybe that's you. You go by your middle name because your first name is your dad's name, so you just stuck with your middle name. Or maybe you have your first name, and then somewhere along the way, you've been given a nickname. So what we do know is his name was John. He was also named or called Mark, and so most people just call him John Mark. But John Mark wasn't an eyewitness. John Mark was the scribe for Peter, Peter being one of Jesus's disciples. So years later, John Mark sits down and looks at Peter. He's like, Peter, you got to tell the story, the gospel story, the good news of Jesus. So Peter is telling the story that he personally lived out as he walked with Jesus. And this is where we're going to jump in. Peter's letting us know that they meaning Jesus and the other disciples, they were on their way up to Jerusalem. Now, it's important to understand that they were actually headed south. Like in our day and age, when we say up, people just think you're headed north somewhere. But in that day and age, in that culture, they would always say, no matter which direction, that they were going up to Jerusalem. Now, for Peter and the disciples and Jesus, they were saying up for two reasons. One was they were literally going from Jericho to Jerusalem, and there was some 3,300 to 3,400 feet of an elevation climb up to Jerusalem. But everyone would use up to Jerusalem because Jerusalem was a holy city. It was the epicenter in that culture. And they were going up to Jerusalem. And then Peter gives us such an important insight. He said, with Jesus leading the way. Now, we can't overlook this. It's so easy to overlook. We can't overlook that statement. You see, Jesus was considered a rabbi, and rabbis would always walk in front of his disciples. That was a very common practice. But Peter wants to highlight that Jesus was leading the way, so much so that the disciples were astonished and those that followed were afraid. You see, the disciples could tell that something was different about Jesus, something about his pace, something about his cadence, something about that day and that moment as they were following Jesus. It was like no other. And the crowds even picked up on it. The crowds, Peter says, used the word afraid. It wasn't like they were scared or afraid, but it was more like they were astonished. More like they could tell that something was off, something was different. Something was, well, the intensity level was just a tad bit higher. And Jesus, well, Jesus could tell that his disciples were feeling, they were discerning this moment. So Jesus grabs the 12 disciples and he pulls them in. He looks at all of them and he says, you got to hear something again. Jesus is like, I've told you this before, but I'm going to tell you yet again. And then Jesus uses a name, his favorite name for himself. He says, the Son of Man is going to be delivered into the hands of the chief priests and the other spiritual leaders, that these spiritual rulers are going to condemn the Son of Man. They're going to hand him into the hands of the Roman officials, the Roman people, the Gentiles. And the Son of Man will be mocked and spit on and whipped and killed. But on the third day, the Son of Man will rise. I mean, just imagine that moment. Again, this wasn't the first time the disciples had heard this. But on that day, they all knew that something was different within Jesus. And then James and John, two of the disciples, they grab Jesus and they pull Jesus to the side. Now, the other 10 disciples, I mean, they were still in earshot. They could see that James and John had pulled Jesus over, that they had kind of cornered Jesus. And so they were all listening in because now they're thinking to themselves, like, what do they want? And James and John looks at Jesus and said, hey, Jesus, teacher, we want you to do us a favor. And Jesus asked the question, what is your request? I think James and John looked at each other real quickly. And then they said, hey, Jesus, when you get to that position of glory, when you establish your kingdom, when you become king, we want to be on the left and right hand side of you. Seats of power, seats of position, seats of prominence. Hey, Jesus, when you get your seat, we want the other two on each side of you. And Jesus looks at James and John and he was like, you have no clue what you're asking. You have no clue what you're talking about. Now remember, Peter's telling this story to John Mark as John Mark is writing it down. So Peter's just thinking back years to that moment, that interaction. I mean, Peter was there. And I think Peter just kind of gets a smile because now he fully understands the story. He's lived through it. And he looked at John Mark and goes, I just got to be transparent. The other 10 of us overhearing this conversation between James and John and Jesus, Peter goes, hey, John Mark, just write it down this way. When the 10 other disciples heard what James and John had asked, they were indignant. If you have kids or you've been around kids, maybe you're a grandparent or you watch small kids, you've heard a child say, that's not fair. You've heard a child say it many, many times. Well, that's the best way to kind of get into this word indignant. The other 10 were like, hey, Jesus, that's not fair. Hey, Jesus, we've walked with you this last 3 years, just like James and John. Hey, Jesus, we've left our jobs, our friends, our family, just like James and John. Hey, Jesus, we have sacrificed greatly, just like James and John. Look, Jesus, we've done everything they've done. Why do they get the two seats of prominence and power and position? Hey, we should be considered as well. That's not fair. And I think Peter was reliving this moment. And I think Peter was saying to Jesus, hey, Jesus, out of all 12, I was the only one. When you came walking on the water, I was the only one to get out of the boat first. Hey, Jesus, I should get at least one of those seats. I should, because I was always first, Jesus. I might have got some things wrong, but I was always first. And Jesus could tell that this conversation was splintering the disciples. And so Jesus brought them together. And he sees this moment to teach something that would be foundational for the launch of a movement that was first called the Way, what we now call the church. And Jesus said, you know that the rulers in this world lord it over their people, and officials flaunt their authority over those under them. Jesus is like, hey, you understand how this world works. People in power lord it over to the people underneath them. The people in positions of prominence lord it over the people underneath them. The people that have the positions, right? They like to position up. Jesus is like, you know how this world works. And guess what? We get that to this day. Nothing has changed, has it? And then Jesus, with four words, flip the whole paradigm upside down. Looking at every one of his disciples, he says, not so with you. It must be different. It must be different. For Jesus, with his eternal kingdom, it must look different than everything else in this world. He looked at his disciples like, hey, come on, guys. I know what you see, and you want your position of power and prominence and prestige. I know what you want, but not so with you. It must be different. It must look different. You must love and live and lead differently. And then Jesus clarifies, he goes, whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first among you must be the slave of everyone else. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others and give his life as a ransom for many. You must flip the paradigm upside down. And right after this, as they continued on their way to Jerusalem, they had reached Jericho. They had moved through the town of Jericho. They were leaving the town. A large crowd was following them. And there's two reasons why there was this massive crowd. One was everywhere Jesus went, crowds of people were following Jesus. Crowds of people wanted to hear what Jesus was going to teach. Crowds of people wanted to be healed. I mean, people followed Jesus. But the second reason the crowd was so big, every good, God-fearing, God-honoring Jew was making their way to Jerusalem. Why? The Passover was about ready to begin. The Passover. Out of all the feasts and festivals, the Passover was the most important for the Jewish people. So they're making their way out of Jericho, headed up to Jerusalem. And a blind beggar named Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, was sitting beside the road. Now this is important, because this blind beggar beside the road, that was a position of someone who was sidelined, someone who was marginalized, someone who was overlooked, someone who was insignificant, someone who was just disregarded. I mean, maybe someone would flip him a coin. Maybe it was someone would throw him a crust from their bread. Maybe someone would just glance his way. But man, the crowds following Jesus, making their way to Jerusalem for the Passover festival. I mean, they didn't want to pay any attention to Bartimaeus. And you see, out of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, out of all the miracles, the only person named right here, Bartimaeus. I just wonder, we don't know this in the text. I just wonder when Peter is telling John Mark this story, I wonder if Peter stopped and said, hey, John Mark, you got to include his name. I mean, this moment, this story is that important. Write down his name, Bartimaeus. And Bartimaeus shouted out, Jesus, Son of David. A title, Son of David, that reflected Bartimaeus' belief that Jesus was the Messiah, the promised one. He said, have mercy on me. But the crowd turned on him and they screamed back at Bartimaeus, quiet, shut up. You're insignificant. You're nothing. We're following Jesus and we're going to Passover. Well, for Bartimaeus, it only made him scream louder. And so he screamed louder, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. And when Jesus heard him, he stopped. The literal translation there is that Jesus stood still. Think about how Peter described just earlier. Jesus was leading the way. The disciples were astonished and the rest of the people were afraid. Jesus' pace and his cadence. I mean, everyone could tell that, man, Jesus was on mission. There was something different about how Jesus was just carrying himself. But in this moment, when Jesus hears Bartimaeus scream out to him, he comes to a complete standstill. See, stopping is part of following. For all of us, over the last 3 or so weeks, we've all stopped. It's been an interesting part of all of our journey. In a society, in a culture where we go, 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 go. Everything is almost standing still. Life has shifted in such an interesting way. For my wife and I, Kim and I, we have found our entire cadence and pace just looking so remarkably different. We've played more family games in the last 3 weeks than we have the previous 52 weeks. I don't say that proudly. I'm just saying it's kind of solemn for me to even admit that, but it's true. We've had so much incredible time around the dinner table where we've just laughed and we've competed because everyone in my family, competition is part of who we are. I mean, we compete. And one of the things already, I know God is scripting something so incredible within our family because one day we're going to look back to this season where we were quarantined, where we were forced to stop. And one of the storylines, God is already speaking into us, is that we will have had some of the most incredible moments as a family. There's something about stopping. And Jesus stopped and said, tell him to come here. So they called the blind man. And I love that Peter makes sure that John Mark writes this down. They call the blind man and, well, they who were screaming at him just moments before now say, cheer up. It's like, well, we were telling you to shut up. Now we're telling you to cheer up. And they said, come on, Jesus is calling you. And when Bartimaeus approaches Jesus, what question do you think Jesus asked him? It was the same question. Jesus had asked James and John, what do you want me to do for you? Can you imagine James and John in that moment? I mean, the hair had to stand up on the back of their neck for the other disciples. I mean, they had heard Jesus ask James and John that question. I mean, their hearts had to be up in their throats. I think Jesus, again, it's not in the text. I think when Jesus asked Bartimaeus that question, what do you want me to do for you? I think Jesus got all of his 12 disciples' eyes. He got all of their attention. He's like, hey, you all better lean into this moment right here. And Bartimaeus said, my rabbi, I want to see. And Jesus said, go. Your faith has healed you. You see, when Jesus looked at James and John and asked them, what do you want me to do for you? James and John were seeking fame. That's what they wanted. The fame that came from being Jesus's friend, the fame that came from sitting on the right and left hand side of Jesus. But when Jesus asked Bartimaeus that question, Bartimaeus had a much different driving motivation. When he said, I wanted to see, Jesus hit on. It wasn't about his eyesight. It was all about his faith in the Son of David, the Messiah, the promised one. If Jesus would ask you that question, what do you want me to do for you? How would you answer? Would it be about your fame, your position, your power, your prominence? Would it all be about, hey, Jesus, grow my faith? You see, one of the prayers, I've shared this before, it's one of those prayers I find myself just going back to and going back to and going back to. It's a simple prayer. God, help me to see what you see. I'd encourage all of you, say that prayer. God, in this moment right now, in quarantine right now, help me to see what you see. God, in this moment when fear seems to be lurking around every corner, God, help me to see what you see. God, I'm not sure where money's going to come from. God, help me to see what you see. God, I'm not sure what tomorrow's going to look like or the next week is going to look like. God, I'm not sure if I can make it another 30 days, another 45 days, but God, help me to see what you see. God, grow my faith. God, I want to trust in you. Are you looking for fame? Or you want God to grow your faith? Instantly, the man could see, and he followed Jesus down the road. Bartimaeus, the man who was blind, sitting on the side of the road, disregarded, overlooked, marginalized, now can see. And not only could he see, he was following Jesus down the road to Jerusalem, where Jesus would climb upon a cross to die for him, his disciples, for me, and for you. My encouragement for you is this. Hold on to the words. Not so with you. In this season, when you find yourself going top down, when you find yourself going, what I need and what's best for me and what I'm concerned with, flip it upside down. Whisper those words, not so with me. And say, God, help me to see what you see. Not so with me. Help me to see what you see. Not so with me. Help me, God, to see what you see. I want to be a servant. I want to be a servant. That's what it means to love like Jesus loved, to live like he lived, to lead like he led. So let's be a fearless church. A church that prays relentlessly, a church that loves intentionally, a church that gives generously. A not so with you type of church. If you need help, if you want to help, all you have to do is go to Fearless Church and put that dot right before the last CH. Maybe you need help and want to help. Go there. Just join a movement of people. Ordinary, not perfect, broken people. They're committed to being the not so with you type of church. Let's pray. Lord, I just pray that we will see what you see. What matters to you will matter to us. What breaks your heart will break our hearts. That we will see how you love and we will love that way. That, Lord, we will follow your steps to live our lives in reflection of you. In your name I pray. Amen.